Hello, everyone. Welcome to 4J's in a Podcast, episode 13. Now we're officially a teenager.
Did we change the name?
Yeah, I thought it was 4J's in a comic.
It's 4J's in a comic.
Oh, I totally muffed that. Welcome to 4J's and a comic podcast.
There you go.
All better now.
With me, as always, is JP and Joe from the fantastic pandamanga.com Geek Life podcast.
What's up?
Hey, hey.
I heard the latest one was pretty amazing.
Oh, was it now?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good to hear.
There was a new sexy voice on there talking about Brood Hollow.
Oh, yes, yes. we had John on our most recent recording. We actually switched the release schedule, though, so it's going to be out a second, but yes.
Well, by the time this is up, it'll...
Oh, yes.
And
yeah, that was awesome.
Also with us is our fellow metalhead, Justin Woods from askametalhead.com.
Hello.
And tonight, we have a very special guest, Mary from Astoria, Queens, who flew all the way across country to join in our podcast tonight.
Hey, glad to be here.
Wait till you hear her laugh. It's awesome.
There will be no laughing.
Are you ticklish?
I don't know.
That's a yes. That's a yes.
You should see the look of terror in
She's laughing right now. Just be quiet and enjoy it. No laughing. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, there won't be much laughter tonight, as the book we're reviewing is a pretty serious book. It's called Pedro and Me, subtitled Friendship, Loss, and What I've Learned, written by Jed Winnick. If the name sounds somewhat familiar to you, he has been doing comics now for about 15 years, mainstream Marvel DC stuff. And before that, he was on MTV's The Real World, the third season in San Francisco. When I thought about doing this book, I emailed everyone and asked them, without Googling it, do you guys know who Pedro Zamora is? Justin, being my age, I thought he might get it, you know, as he's 40, like me. And the JP and Joe, being a decade younger than us, it was very interesting to see if that pop culture-ness had permeated, you know, for people that are a decade younger. Mm-hmm. And both of them wrote back, the name sounds kind of familiar, but I don't really know. And then Justin was kind of the same way. He's like, that name sounds really familiar. And then when I sent them over the wiki page on the book, you know, instantly Justin's like, oh, yeah, you know, I remember watching that.
All I saw was Pedro and Me. And I was like, oh, yeah, I know exactly who we're talking about now. I just couldn't place the face. Like, I knew the name. I knew it was important, but I couldn't remember why. Like, why do I care about this? Mm-hmm. So until I saw the Pedro and Me, and I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, okay, I remember.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that I was, I want to say, 10 years old when that show came out.
You were a mere squirt.
Yeah, I think I was about 20, 21.
Sounds about right, yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. But I distinctly remember seeing, like, a video in school that I'm pretty confident was a capture of one of Pedro's lectures. So I definitely remember who that is, and I can remember some of the story around that season.
Yeah.
Because that was definitely one of the most memorable seasons, and several of those people have been back on MTV over the years and have done a lot with their lives.
For me, you know, when I got back into reading comics, one of the first comics I picked up was Jed Winnick's Adventures of Barry Ween, Boy Genius, which is a hilarious comic.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's about a 10-year-old who curses like Justin Woods.
I don't curse.
With like a 500 IQ and all the hijinks and such that he gets into.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's a great book. We should pull it out and do it sometime.
Yeah, I would like that.
And I'm like, that name Jed Winnick sounds familiar. And I get to the, you know, the back matter, and it's like Jed Winnick from MTV's The Real World, San Francisco. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. You know, I remember, you know, he was a cartoonist. I didn't really remember, you know, exactly what he did. And that stuff was really great. He later went on, after that, he got the mainstream comic thing where he was doing...
DC, right?
Well, first for Exiles from Marvel, which was an X-Men time-traveling book, a la Sliders.
Okay. Yeah.
And then...
Oh, man, I think I have his entire run on that.
Yeah, he did like the first, I want to say like 3 years of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he went on to...
Wait, hold on a second. There's an entire run of X-Men... about little tiny burgers?
No, Sliders, like the sci-fi show where they would go from one universe to another. Oh,
because I can't imagine that would be very interesting.
Although Sliders are the tastiest burger, I assert.
But, you know, the little tiny burgers.
That's why they're so much better.
And regular burgers hate and fear them because they don't understand.
Would you rather fight one horse-sized burger or 100 slider-sized burgers?
Fight?
Eat, fight.
Oh, the sliders. Any
it depends
day
on
week.
How you, I mean,
sliders.
Chewing is kind of violent. Have you ever had somebody bite you?
Yeah. Right on the nose, man.
Right on the nose?
Yeah, I was in, preschool. No, before that. It was in, like, daycare. I was, like, 3 years old.
You remember that far back?
Dude, it was traumatic.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. It wasn't that long ago.
No, I don't know. It was, some girl set something down. I picked it up, and she's like, that's mine. And I'm like, you're not using it anymore. And she leaned in and bit me.
Mary's never bit anyone either.
You know, it was a territorial thing. It happened. My cousin.
Nor have you ever heard that story at any family reunion we've been at.
The thing that comes up most often is just how red my uncle turned when he saw the damage that I inflicted on his son by chomping on him. The story goes there was actually steam coming out of his ears.
Wow.
We won't tell you where she bit him.
She was like 3.
I mean. Oh, that happens. Yeah. I'll tell you what. There's nothing. You know you're a father when you have your little infant in your arms, your little baby. And if you're like me, you know, I have a hairy chest. And they grab a handful of hair and pull.
Yeah.
You know you're a man if you don't drop your kid. You know you're a father. You know you're a man. Because if you can sustain that.
You're good.
Because you would not imagine. You cannot believe the death grip that little tiny babies have.
It's insane. It's like they could do pull-ups or something.
It's crazy. Yeah, yeah, they can do little baby pull-ups on your chest hair. Yeah.
Or when they finally get to walk. You know, they're right at nut height.
A lot of head buds. Yeah.
You know how you have those little things that you protect the corner of the tables with so they don't bump their heads? Mm-hmm. That's where cups came from. You have to wear a little baby, like, you know, anti-baby karate kick cups or headbutt cups.
That's right where they go to. They're like, hi, whack.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't wait to see you thump. I'll be on the ground for a moment. Anyway, so we were talking about hamburgers.
Grab your chest hair.
Babies and dogs.
Yes.
Babies and dogs.
I knew you were talking about, you know, I'm not that dense.
I know. But it's a chance to talk about hamburger sliders.
I kind of want a slider now, though. I kind of want some little tiny hamburgers.
We should have some.
Who came up with that idea?
A brilliant, brilliant person.
I don't know.
Or a really small person.
Maybe that really.
I think it was Warwick Davis.
Maybe. He was like, you know, these regular sized burgers are just too giant for my hands. What can I do to solve this problem? You could get bigger hands. No, I think I'll make a smaller hamburger. Well, why do they call them sliders? Oh, because they slide right down?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. That's a good question.
I think that's why.
Joe is the food preparation guy that we know. So.
Has anybody invented little tiny tacos?
Oh, yeah.
Dude,
mini tacos?
Oh, yeah.
There's such a thing as mini tacos?
Taquitos.
Yeah, I sell the hell out of them.
No, a taquito is a roll taco. No, what's a mini taco?
Mini taco is just a little taco.
I mean, I know that, but like... Man, I was so worried that I was going to be up all night searching Google and not being able to find
Go to my store, grab... They're in the frozen section with the appetizers.
They're just like
we've got
tacos.
Chicken mini tacos and beef mini tacos. I don't like
obligatory Trader Joe's plug.
Yeah. I don't like saying mini chicken tacos because that's a taco made out of mini chicken.
Many
chickens died to make that taco.
How many baby little mini chickens does it make? Does it take to make a taco?
It's a little taco, not that many.
I know, right?
Probably just one apiece.
It's proportionate to the size of the mini taco.
In my mind, they're made out of Cornish game hens.
Probably. Probably. But they don't want to call it a Cornish game hen because that scares people.
They're like, this is a gamey mini taco.
Well, they're just like, that doesn't sound like a chicken to me. Anyway, so Pedro and me. Pedro and me.
So he worked on
Marvel for a while.
Yeah, Marvel moved for on to a while. DC.
And then he moved on to DC to write Green Lantern. And while he was at DC, there was a big controversy because
Was it because of the mini wiener run that he did?
Yes, yes. Because he introduced a gay supporting character into Green Lantern. And
around when was this?
Like 99, 2000? Hmm. He introduced a gay supporting character, and then it became Judd Winnick is pushing a homosexual agenda in all the comics he does.
Oh, awesome.
And that's kind of been his rap since then. I thought it was very unfounded, but we live in probably the most tolerant place in the country.
That's probably true. Yeah, that's probably true.
So I think
San Francisco Bay Area.
Yeah, I think certainly. San Francisco Bay Area, our views are a lot different than somewhere in middle America, flyover state.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting when you read, you know, stories or news that have to do with, I mean, I don't want to call it a controversy because it sounds sort of odd, but, you know, the whole issue, the whole, you know, gay and lesbian and AIDS and all that sort of stuff. And for me, growing up out in California, I guess, like you were saying, John, it's a different perspective, because for me, it just seems like it shouldn't be so controversial, you know, like, I don't know. It always kind of goes like, you know, when things are so intense.
Don't forget that segregation was still around when our parents were were kids, right? True, so man. We're not that far removed a lot of this. It was, you know, I think as a country, we are becoming more tolerant.
Yeah.
Because I think a good portion of it is, you know, sort of social media and things like that, right?
Yeah. But George Takei is fixing the world.
There you go.
And that's what's, you know, interesting
about
that. Yeah. And I mean, and that's what's interesting about that, because when this show came out in 94, this probably was the first time many people in Midwest, South, probably actually could. Sorry about that.
I'll have you know that my volume is set to vibrate. So if I smile.
Ooh, phone call. Oh, my.
Oh, my. What's your name?
You know, if you had an iPhone, there'd be a switch that you could just turn it off immediately.
Well, they have to make the iPhones easy for all of you jitterbug users. Dude, iPhone's a fucking jitterbug. Are you kidding me?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't used iPhone recently.
It's a jitterbug.
What do you mean by that?
Have you seen the jitterbugs? Like the jitterbug phone that has like giant buttons and...
Oh, no, I have not.
Like it's for your grandma. It's like the phone for your grandma.
It's the cell phone for old people. So it's like 911 is a giant button.
Okay, okay.
That's, you know, it's programmed.
I had an iPhone for a while, and then I converted over to an Android, and within like an hour of using it, I was pissed that I had used an iPhone for so long. I remember
coming
into work.
The same thing happened to me.
I was so fucking pissed.
You got one like a month or two after I got mine, right?
No, I've had Android for
Android, really?
A while.
Oh, you got a Galaxy just recently.
Yeah.
Bright though?
Yeah. Like I could tether, I could do all kinds of stuff.
I got my iPhone for $1.
I just distinctly remember like turning on my Android for the first time and going like, "Oh yeah, so all these things that I used to have to jailbreak my iPhone for, I can just do."
Have you seen the new? They actually like almost turned iPhone into
to Android.
We're
yet.
We're beating up on Mary because apparently Mary. Of course, I mean,
you know, FaceTime's pretty cool. I had several Androids before I switched to the iPhone, and I was constantly having issues with like shit not working.
Yeah,
I was constantly running out of space, even though I got the biggest fucking SD card I could. It was just the internal thing, and so I went away from it because I couldn't deal with having to constantly erase all of my emails, text messages, and pictures just to make my phone function.
Hmm. And shockingly, her living in New York City, like, our 4G is way better out here than...
Yeah, I can't get LTE where I live, and I don't even get service down at my office. But that's ever since...
Sandy.
I haven't been able to get any.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Sandy. So
just another reason why the Bay Area is better than...
This will all get cut out, I'm sure.
I think we should leave this in.
You think so?
Yeah.
We'll just cut out the part where I said this will get cut out. But you'll have to cut it out twice now.
Yeah.
Technically three
times. Leave that in, too. All right. Now that our rambling is done because of my cell phone...
We're afraid. We're terrified to talk about this goddamn book.
Get to the end of this book, and it's like... I think that everybody here probably shed a tear. To the end of the... I mean, I certainly did.
What? Give me a break.
Yeah, I'm not so butch I can't admit that I bawled a
little
bit.
When I got to the last third of it, somehow the Thai restaurant next door must have been chopping a lot of onions.
Yeah.
Because My eyes were certainly watering.
I cried. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, so sad.
I cried.
I was on the plane coming out here, just trying to hold it in.
Oh, I didn't
out on the plane. Oh,
and Mary and I had both read this book numerous times before.
Yeah.
You know, and so getting back to it, probably in 94, that was one of the first times there probably was a young gay person with AIDS that was beamed into a lot of middle America's.
Forget the fact that he had AIDS. You're talking about a young gay man. You're talking about gay. The first time that like mass media had really seen a gay person in everyday, like their everyday lives with no stigma, no BS, just a gay person living.
Yeah, it wasn't a story that was being told. They didn't fit it in there.
Yeah, it was real.
It was a real person.
And he was normal. Yeah. He was just like, you know, for the most part, like he was just like you and me.
Mm-hmm. I mean, literally, he was Pedro Zamora 6 months older than me. You know, so it could have been just, you know, it could have been just, you know, like me moving to San Francisco for the first time.
God, you're right. And, I didn't even think about that. Like,
you know, I remember Judd Winnick came and lectured at Sac State when I was going there, and it was supposed to be Pedro on the tour.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And, you know, I mean, but at that time, I just knew him, you know, that guy from Real World. I mean, it didn't really come through that it was this, you know, big thing.
So then after reading this, that must have really resonated with you.
Yeah, I mean, when this came out, I was, like I said, I really liked Judd Winnick from first time I discovered Adventures of Barry Ween. And then when this came out, knowing the story, you know, and then sitting and reading it, you know, it really hammered home.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, I feel this book has gotten kind of lost in the shuffle, you know, of comics that are out there. Because I think it is just as important as a book like Mouse, a book like Parasopolis, of the ones that people talk about, like, this is what comics can do. Can educate.
Yeah. It definitely steps outside of the power fantasy sort of, you know, cacophony that we see all the time with superheroes and tight clothes and big boobs and big muscles and powers and saving the world. And so much of that is great and fun and can actually be used to pinpoint a lot of things. But, you know, on a basic level, it's as a theme, it's very, very different. And it tries to elicit a different sort of emotion. And this one draws powerful emotions that are, I would say, very different than your average comic book shelf.
Yeah, I was surprised that we were... You want to finish your thought?
Oh, can do. That's what I said, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I was surprised. I didn't know that this was a comic.
Oh, yeah?
When you sent me the link, I was like, we're going to read a book? Okay.
The right, cover looks like a book. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because I knew, but I didn't know that it was a comic. And when I got into it, you know, that's when I was like, wow, why wasn't this critically acclaimed? Because
it won a lot of awards.
Okay, good. Yeah. Because,
but I mean, it's,
because remember at one point it said something about him being nominated for something.
Yeah, but did he win Eisner's or did it just
nominate? Well, it was nominated, but I mean, he won GLAAD Awards and YASLA stuff. I mean, like library, you know, type awards.
Okay.
You know? But it being 13 years later since the book came out, you know, and 18 years since, or 19 years since World San Francisco was on, and, you know, about 18 years since Pedro died, it's just kind of gotten, I want to say, like, lost in the shuffle, you know, because it's, I think I'm probably one of the few comic book stores that will always have a copy of this on hand. You know, I've only sold probably, like, a handful in the 10 years I've been open.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a book that I'm always going to keep on my shelves because I think it's that important, much like Mouse and Parasopolis and stuff like that. And I mean, that's why I'm glad we have this to kind of, you know, talk about forgotten books because, you know, people always, you know, ask about Mouse or Parasopolis or something when they're coming in. But I don't think, you know, this will be on, you know, the tip of someone's tongue.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And it deserves to be.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Getting into the book now that we've kind of editorialized and gone off, it starts with Judd Winnick getting into a cab to go to the airport to see Pedro in the hospital sick. And the guy in the cab driver says, you know, you have this air of darkness around you. And
he says, that's not what you're going there for. You need to go there and bring the light.
Yeah. And that, I mean, it was one of the things that really hit me, you know, kind of in the, You know, that's really deep, you know, and then
it goes, I like how that guy bookends the story because he's on both sides and they have a very good conversation on both sides. And it's neat the transformation of Judd just being another passenger and this guy's willing to be human and real with him. But in the end, you know, being on the real world, Judd sort of come into everybody's lives and it's in the media and come into their homes really. And people have like a personal relationship. And I, you know, the way that he says towards the end, he actually refers to him as Judd sort of unprompted, you know, and says like, he meant a lot. And he goes, who? And he goes, Pedro, you know, he meant a lot to us, Judd. And it's just kind of like, wow, like that transformation from the first time to later on.
Yeah. Cause you know, by that time the real world had aired.
And- Because I think that when he was first visiting Pedro, the world, real world was, you know, maybe early on.
Yeah, early on, yeah. It
hadn't really come to its end.
So then after that, we're kind of given the life stories of both Judd and Pedro. Judd is, you know, has a normal suburban life, two doting parents, growing up in, you know, the Midwest.
Off Long to... Island, that's not the Midwest.
Oh, it was Long Island, right? Yeah, for some reason, I thought it was Michigan. That was
New Yorker.
Yeah, New Yorker. And we kind of see, you know, he has the normal life. He's really good at drawing, did okay in school, went off to college, met a college buddy who went on to become, well, he was, is Brad Meltzer, who now has, you know, the Brad Meltzer Decoded show on like History Network or whatever, one of those. But I really liked, he was showing... Oh, yeah, his junior year of high school, he was in the social studies class, and he had a teacher write on the board, I am gay. And then so everyone was asking him, the teacher, these questions, you know, aren't you married? And I'm like, yes, I'm married, but she's a beard. She's really a lesbian. And going on, and they were asking him questions like, one of the guys was, well, would you hit on me? And he's like, I wouldn't hit on you any more than I'd hit on the female student next to you if I was straight, kind of thing. And they do that for an hour, and then the teacher says at the end, oh, just to let you know, I'm not really gay. But it was very ambiguous enough to be, was that real, or was it just a teaching lesson?
He uses a very powerful dialogue to start up with the students.
One of them really asks, he asked a question, it was, why do we always think of gay people in the bedroom, in the sense of the bedroom? And so one of the things that was really pertinent about this for me was, 94, 95, right around that time when this came out, like when real the real world came out. This was probably the first real world I ever watched. Let's see, 73, 83, 93 makes me about 20, 21-ish, right?
Yeah, you and I are about the same age, a couple months older.
But I don't look it.
I'm the one that has hair.
It's okay. It's all right. Doesn't make you... anyway... It's just a solar panel for a sex machine.
That's the first time I've heard that's good.
Nice.
Okay. Back on track. This is really relevant or poignant, I would hope. I came from a background where my mom is a wonderful, amazing human being a single mother and raising us. But my mom came from, you know, sort of San Jose, tough area. And she was a bit of a bigot and a bigot. And also she was homophobic. And so I grew up sort of a little bit of a bigot and a little bit homophobic.
Because that's what you knew.
Well, yeah. And I admit it because it's really that's who I am. And, you know, you might as well get who I am, the real person. However, in about 92, 93, maybe a little bit later, four or five years after, I guess it would have been like let's say 95 to 97, I went to work for a retail chain called Sunglass Hut. And I worked in Sacramento, of all places, downtown Plaza. And very soon after I started, it became apparent that I was the only straight person in my store. Both my manager and my assistant manager were lesbians, and one of my coworkers was gay. And it took him, I can remember very clearly, it took him like a week of talking to me to come out to me that he was gay. And eventually it came down to him at one point admitting that he was saying, oh, because I had, you know, my kids were very, actually, yeah, it was 97 because my daughter had been born. So it was like 96, 97. I was like, you know, my wife's pregnant. We're going to have a kid, blah, blah, blah. And he's, oh, man, I wish I could have kids. It'd be great. And I'm like, oh, you're a bit young, but you'll get married and have kids soon. And he goes, well, now, you know, I can't really have, you know, that will never happen for me. So he's like subtly giving me all these hints and I'm like, but there, well, you know, you'll meet the right woman. But there. He's like, well, no, I'm gay. And, you know, I was like, oh. And so here I come. I'm homophobic. Very mildly. I'm a pretty open-minded guy and stuff like that. But I always thought of this exact thing. You always think of gay people as sort of, you know, what they do in the bedroom, right? And it maybe took 3 or 4 weeks of me really paying attention to the people that I was around to totally reverse that completely to where I was not even remotely homophobic. I was not even remotely, you know, and same with being, you know, sort of a bigot, like, you know, I'm not at all. I used to be when I was younger because you sort of grow up with that, right? It, you know, when mm-hmm. your parents are doing something, it's okay, right? It, to a certain degree, like it's there's an approval level there.
Well, it's, you know, up until a certain point, it's the ultimate authority in your world.
Exactly.
And so that's the example.
And so why I wanted to mention that is because I remember watching this and early on after, you know, sort of rekindling my thoughts about after reading this and remembering what my feelings were watching the show, I was sort of like ambivalent towards the whole AIDS gay thing and really more aggravated at one of the characters named Puck, who's not even really mentioned. And he was such a douchebag.
Yeah.
He was such a dirty, disgusting.
He's like the
disgusting.
Only one anyone remembers from that show, unfortunately.
Well, I remembered the hot little brunette, and I remembered Zamora, you know, Pedro, mm-hmm. very, very much. And Sean. When he starts to mention Sean, I was like, oh my God, that's right. There's a, there, you know, he had a boyfriend.
That's actually what made me think about this book again, because I was reading a news article that Sean had passed away 2 weeks ago.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Yeah. Oh, because he was HIV positive as well, right?
I mean, but he made it to like, you know, 46. He would have lived with AIDS for like 30 years.
Good for him. Life expectancy. So anyway, I wanted to share that because, you know, there was a moment where all of a sudden I'm the only straight person and I didn't feel
ostracized.
Oh, no. As a matter of fact, when you have the women in your store pointing out hot women for you, it's like the coolest thing ever. Now, of course, that's, you know, sort of contradictory, but they were just people. They're just people like you and me, man. And that's, I think, the problem is that we don't see them. You don't see the people that are different from you for anything other than that one particular difference. And that's what we hang on to because we know that that's, but, you know, you see them as people.
I mean, and that's, you know, I think the beauty of living in the area we live in.
Yeah.
You know, there's every race. You see every day.
Right.
You know, and mm-hmm. you see gay people, straight people, whatever, Mexican people. I mean, you see every race, every creed, every sexual orientation there is on a daily basis.
It's an incredible melting pot out here.
I would say that your sexual orientation is completely and utterly irrelevant to anybody but you and a consenting partner. Nobody should give a crap about it. You know,
which,
do you care how I stack my dishes or put my plates away in my kitchen? No. Is it something? Is it relevant? No. Guess what? This is. I mean, not to. No, I mean, at the most, with the most respectful level, I'm saying. You know, if you are sitting here listening to this and you're gay and you've never come out to anybody, somebody should pat you on the back and say, "Just be you. Just be you." So anyway, and then my last employer, I worked where my entire department, except for me and one other person, we're all gay. And I'll tell you what, I had some of the best, you don't even have to qualify it to say it, like, but I had some of the best times, one of the best managers I've ever had in my entire life. One of the best, you know, somebody that I still talk to today and hang out and talk, you know, talk with when I get to see him. And so they're just people like you and me. And I think this was the first step. And while you say now it's irrelevant or it's become sort of lost in the shuffle, it's because think about it, like 85, 86 is when, that's kind of when AIDS sort of hit mainstream, right? Mm-hmm. This isn't that far after that. Like, this is, you know.
It's a decade.
Yeah, but a decade in pop culture is a blip. It's a blip. You know?
Well, I remember right before Pedro was on Real World was when Magic Johnson said he had HIV.
Right.
And I remember the reactions from the players that played with him. Mm-hmm. Like, well, we can't have him on the court. What happens if he bleeds on us? What would happen if he's sick? And
he's going to sweat.
Yeah, he's going to sweat.
We can't play with him. He's going to sweat on us. Right.
Yeah. Even at that time, it was well known there is no way you could get AIDS that way. But just seeing the ignorance that came out, you know, in that time, and that was only, you know, 20 years ago.
Okay, but think about it. 20 years ago, you have Magic Johnson saying that. It took 20 years for an NBA player. Last year, an NBA player came out and said, I'm gay.
Yeah.
It took 20 years for that to happen.
And he came out because he was at the end of his career. It wasn't someone that,
right.
You know, it wasn't someone's like, I'm a star in the middle of my career. It's basically his career was over for the most
part. So there's no threat to the NBA for him to come out. What would be spectacular, even though it's not possible, but as somebody of like Shaq's, you know, Shaq's stature in the middle of his career, or John, or like Michael Jordan in the middle of his career, like after he'd already won a couple of championships to go, by the way, I'm gay. Anyway, so I didn't want to make it about, I don't want to make it about me, but I just wanted to share that because
well, I think that is good to keep in mind when reading this book, because, you know, where we are as a culture and the way that we deal with this subject has grown a lot since the time this show came out.
It's become normalized.
It has. And it still is something that people have a lot of conflict about, now. Mm-hmm. And back then it was even more. And like John was suggesting, that it's probably one of the first times that just a real normal human being was just on television in people's living rooms saying, like, I'm gay and I'm just a person like everybody else. And I think that that's really powerful to take into this, because it helps you to appreciate how much of an incredibly powerful person Pedro was, how much incredible strength it took for him to, there's a great scene where he's talking on the phone to his very best friend, talking about having a very hard time, feeling a little sick, feeling like he's under a lot of pressure. And his friend's like, man, it's, you know, forget it. Just, you know, what are you worried? You're going to let the producers down like this, you know? And he's like, I can't give up. I cannot give up. And, you know, his purpose of being there and to spread the word and continue on his mission to educate, is just so noble and so awesome and so brave. And it's like hearing you guys talk about that time, specifically about this subject, helps to shed even more light about how much of an extraordinary human being he was.
Well, plus the fact that he was, I mean, that's one of the things that was so compelling about this book. It's kind of like the movie Titanic. Like, you kind of know how the ending is going to be, but it's all the amazing little things that, you know, it's all the Lego pieces that get put together that you didn't know. Like, I didn't know that he was so well educated and sort of, you know, he could have literally basically got a free ride to Harvard or Yale. You don't know this about this stuff, because again, they break it down into 22 minutes and you only see that 22 minutes.
Yeah, 22 minute episodes, right?
Yeah. And so what Judd did in this book was, Judd didn't just lose a friend. He actually made me lose a friend. And that's why I cried at the end of it.
That's
because
that's a great, feels so great much enough. Loss at the end of the book. Yeah.
Yeah. I felt like I lost a friend. And that was the thing that was so, like, as I was reading it, you know, it's like, Jesus Christ, man, I really like this kid.
It gave
you know?
You Judd's point of view that the world is worse off for not having Pedro.
Absolutely. I mean, towards the end, when they were talking about Pedro struggling to speak and how much of an incredible speaker he was, that was probably one of the hardest scenes. I was just choked up about that. It's just like, what an unbelievable loss, that voice.
But it's not just, I mean, the story, you kind of know the story, right? But there's just some amazing stuff in here. The way that he draws and the way that he sort of, or the way that he visualizes certain things, you know, the way that when his first perceptions of AIDS, and it's like this little HIV character walking around the house and him going, good morning, you know, and so.
It's cool that that Judd was so transparent and so vulnerable by saying, like, I always considered myself a raging liberal, and I was always considering myself, I always imagined that I was totally comfortable with all these different subjects and HIV and AIDS and gay and like, hey, cool, great, awesome, whatever, you know, but dealing with his own, like, deep down real insecurities about that as he moved into actually spending, you know, 6 months of his life with someone like that, and how much that was diffused as soon as he met Pedro, you know, but it was just neat for him to, because he's such an icon of, you know, this area.
There's a movie about him now.
There was a TV movie made. Yeah.
I saw some stuff after I did some research.
I just thought it was so cool how he came in and he's like, look, I mean, I was kind of like underinformed and uncomfortable about this in the first place. And I always fancied myself someone who wouldn't be.
And he thought it was, you know, they didn't tell anybody who it was. And he actually initially assumed that it was Puck, because Puck had like these.
That was one of the funniest things in the whole book.
Right?
Yeah, like scabs on his head. He's like, later I just found out that Puck falls down a lot.
He falls down a lot. He hits his head a lot.
And Puck was, you know, the most homophobic, bigoted.
Yeah. He's such a bastard in that.
He was. And that's the funny thing is, like, there's like maybe there's like 5 seconds of Puck in this entire book.
Like three whole pictures of Puck. Yeah.
But I remember the show very clearly. I mean, I remember watching it and just being going, like, he's sitting on the counter shoveling peanut butter out of the peanut butter thing with his bare hands. With open sores
and shooting snot rockets. And
God, the guy was just a pig. It was disgusting. He's your worst.
Easily is the, unfortunately, one of the things that everybody remembers, one of the, I want to say things, one of the people that everybody remembers the most from that season,
yeah, but you
which
know,
is so sad.
You remember him for the worst reasons.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's often what stands out.
Yeah, there's the old journalism adage, if it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah. Anyway, so I just found that interesting that you could see how, you know, nobody cared about, or they just, there's no interest in talking about Puck. And then I went, after I read this, I was like, where are all these people now? And, you know,
I really want to go back and rewatch this. And, like, I remember seeing scattered episodes here and there. Mm-hmm. But I mean, to be completely honest, I don't know if I was even allowed to watch MTV at this age. Like, you know, but I remember seeing a couple episodes here and there, and I'd like to go back and really watch it all.
Mary, by that time, I had already moved out.
Yeah. And,
did you remember watching? Because Mary's 7.5 years younger than me, my sister.
I was like 14.
Yeah, so you would have been.
I had watched Los Angeles, but I hadn't watched a lot of the San Francisco season. So I might have seen some mentioned episodes.
And the town we grew up in is like the most white bread.
Well, like Bass Ackwards.
Town in Arizona. I mean, it's in the middle of nowhere in Arizona. It's one of the ones where it's like, in the summer, the average temperature is like 115 degrees.
Oh,
and
yikes.
Yeah, don't exaggerate, John.
Yeah, don't
and even people from the desert don't want to live there, right? That's why there's not a lot of diversity.
But, I mean, there was very little diversity.
Yeah, no, I mean, there was, you know, there were a lot of natives in
Native
the area.
Americans, yeah.
And then, just a lot of white people and a lot of rednecks.
The town that we grew up in was where the Oklahoma City bombing plot was devised.
Oh, Jesus.
That's the big claim to fame.
Yeah, that's the...
actually when I was in high school, too. A lot of news cameras coming through and...
Federal agents, like, taking over all the hotels. And...
Yeah.
Wow.
With their lack of personality.
And the exciting thing was, yay, we're on the map.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Wow.
So getting back to the book, Judd Winnick, it's a very cartoony style. He was, you know, a strip cartoonist.
Yeah.
And they talked about it.
And he said that his you know, growing up, his idols were Doonesbury and things like that.
So, I mean, it doesn't really have like a superhero comic book type art. It's much more cartoony, but it works very well in the book.
What is the...
Oh, go ahead, Mary.
I think there's a lot.
Go ahead,
Mary. That's actually really powerful in the way that it's drawn.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and talking about that scene where, you know, he is starting to lose his ability to speak. You know, and there's that panel where, you know, he says, Judd saying to him, "Oh, it's all right, it's all right. You know, take your time." And Pedro just looks at him, and he can see him screaming just behind his eyes. It's not all right. You know, and the image
so
that's
expressive.
Associated with that is absolutely amazing, because you do see that. You know, him yelling with his eyes.
It's interesting that you say, you know, that it's a strip comic style, but all things considered, from my perspective, it's a very realistic style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, a very realistic style, probably much more realistic than you would expect in something, you know, in the company of things like Garfield and Doonesbury and things like that, which are, you know, more simplified, iconic type cartoons. This is so much more realistic. I'd like to see more of that strip that he actually... got into the San Francisco, was it Examiner?
Yeah. That one was never collected, but he did another strip that ran for about 3 years called Frumpy the Clown that Oni put out in 2 trade paperbacks.
And
it's cool.
Is it a similar art style or very different?
It's similar to this, but a little bit more cartoony strip style.
I remember on the show him being the failed artist. Like, I remember him going and trying to get... He had some cartoon with a giraffe and some other stuff, and I remember him not getting anywhere. And that was, like, his storyline for a good portion of some of the show until the whole Pedro thing kind of broke, and then Pedro's getting sick and stuff. But, you know... And so that's what I remember of him. And reading this, like, just, like, reading how well this is written, I was like, this guy is really good. Like, I can't... Like, it completely changed my perception of him as an artist, as a writer,
at the end of the book, in his acknowledgments and thank yous, he thanks Pedro, and he starts his thought with, I know it seems redundant based up, you know, at the end of this book, but something that I'm yet to thank Pedro for is through all of my experiences, he gave me, he gave me a story, but through all these experiences, he I learned to, you know, to tell a story.
He gave him his voice, right?
Yeah, his voice. That's what he said. Yeah. You taught me to have a voice.
And when it can tell a story.
Yes.
Now.
Yeah, he can.
Yeah. I mean, he was, you know, one of the top comic writers for DC till last year when the new 52.
So more writing than drawing?
Yeah. More writing. Yeah.
No, he's written a couple in the new 52.
No, he's done now.
Oh, yeah. Now he is. And he did some at the beginning.
Yeah, he did some at the beginning.
But, and I remember the ones I had of his were really good.
But he got Dan DiDio'd, like many other.
So those that aren't familiar with that, like me, what does that mean?
Dan DiDio is the guy in charge of DC Comics right now. And DC Comics right now is basically a garbage fire.
Oh, my.
It's... Mm-hmm. When the internet sides with Rob Liefeld over an issue, you can see how badly run it is.
Yeah. Okay.
So
garbage fire.
Yeah. So that's
very descriptive.
A lot of creators have basically quit DC Comics because of the way they've been treated since the new 52 launch.
Interesting.
And Judd Winnick was one of them. So I just looked up what he's doing, and he's actually now developing a line of children's books, so we'll actually see writing and art from him again coming out in a children's book soon.
That's awesome.
Now, is the children's book going to talk about dental dams and using saran wrap?
Probably not. I was reading on his website. He was talking about, you know, and now he has, you know, young children probably.
Yeah, him and Pam are still together, which is pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, whenever Comic-Con, you always see them together.
Oh, that's cool.
Because he lives in the Bay Area.
He lives in San Francisco, right? Yeah.
And so, you know, he's pretty much at all the local cons. He also developed a cartoon series that ran for about 4 years on the Cartoon Network called The Adventures of Juniper Lee, which was also a pretty cool show.
Huh.
But getting back to this, I mean, it really struck me when I first read it in 2000, you know, and then rereading it 13 years later, it still held up to this day. And like you guys were saying, it's probably just as important now as it was 13 years ago to get that story out. And one of the things that struck me is when Pedro's dying, or right after he died, I remember President Clinton saying, now everyone can say they know someone who lived with AIDS.
Right. Because we all knew Pedro.
Yeah. And then with this being out there, it's another, you know, because pop culture moves on and 15 years
very
later.
Very quickly.
Really. Yeah, very quickly. And, you know, the real world's become a joke.
It's become Jersey Shore.
Well, MTV has become a joke.
Yeah, MTV's become a joke.
I would love to see something this poignant and relevant. And, like, now you'd have to watch Vice to get something like this on TV, right? Vice is it's a website, but they do, like, really heavy investigative journalism.
Interesting.
Really heavy stuff. Like, for example, a couple of them that I saw, one of them was about an entire country that, because of our laws in the United States, cigarette manufacturers, they have to find new clients every year because they have, you know, one of the biggest problems with having cigarettes as your main product your clientele dies. And with all of the stringent laws in the United States, like they can't even advertise anymore, or, you know, there's no real advertising. Exactly. Mm-hmm. They have to go find other countries to do this in. And I can't remember what the country was, but there was a country where,
you know, it was like Thailand or something.
It was like Cambodia or Thailand or Laos, or it was one of those.
8-year-old children.
Did you see the one I'm saying?
I think so.
Yeah. Seriously, like these little kids would get out of school and they're like their little parochial school outfits, and they would go over to walk down this alley, and every kid had two or three cigarettes, and they would smoke, like they would chain smoke. And basically, they're starting an entire, and not only that, if you have cancer because you're a smoker and you go to the doctor, they have these clinics where you go and they basically breathe smoke onto you. They treat you with cigarette smoke. It's asinine. It's the most ridiculous thing you'd ever see. And Vice is there, like Vice is there reporting on it. So, you know, it's basically like, it's really heavy, heavy stuff. As a matter of fact, some of them were like, you know, like on the verge of getting, like one of the guys on the verge of one of the episodes getting kidnapped or something like that because they were investigating trafficking or something like that. I can't remember exactly what it is. I catch them once in a while. It's either on Showtime or HBO. It's one of those shows. But, you know, MTV is a joke now.
Yeah, it's really a sad commentary to go back and see something like this that had a lot of substance to it. And I'm sure there was still a lot of senseless. It was probably very sensationalized at the time anyway, but things have changed so damn much.
Well, I mean, reality TV
is like that. You know, it drums up drama and everything and frames it a certain way. But at the end of the day, like, this is such more compelling and poignant.
I don't think this could get made today.
Yeah.
You know, now it's much more. Reality is keeping up with the Kardashians and Jersey Shore. Yeah. And
it's really sad.
I saw something on Reddit today that blew my mind. There's a comedian, or he's a comedian or a commentary, and he said reality TV is actually called, he called
hyper-reality?
It pornography. Oh. Pornography. P-O-O-R. Poor. Right? And he made the joke
that that's good.
It's a bunch of poor people doing stuff. And then the
honey
rich people,
honey
boo boo. And then rich people could just sit around and, you know, sort of masturbate to it, right? Or laugh about it.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it's like, that's exactly what it is. You watch these, what we would consider backwards people that, again, you know, it's why do we watch Teenage Mom? Now they have this new show, like Too Young to Get Married or something like that, where they're talking, you know, there's like 15-year-olds or 18-year-olds getting married. And like, what the hell is Duck Dynasty? How is that even remotely entertaining?
Good question.
I mean, like this, you know, at the time I was 20, 21, watching, you know, a show about 20 and 21-year-olds out on their own, you know, and it was something that was very relatable. I don't think very many people can relate to the Kardashians or Jersey Shore or Honey Boo Boo or any of that stuff now. It's...
Yeah. And, you know, it was either the season before this or the season after this. There was race related stuff in the show, or you had a comedian who was black and he ended up getting kicked off the show because of something.
That was
he
the
did.
Season before. Though,
season before. Right. Like I watched that season and then this season and I kind of stopped watching. But I've seen here like a couple here and there. But I mean, there are some things that early on, I think they really touched on.
Well, it's definitely some of the earliest reality television.
Well, yeah.
Really.
There's some social commentary a little bit, but I think you're right. They totally dumbed it down. And now it's just a fashion show.
Which is sad because this sort of media is provocative and powerful.
I think maybe the closest thing that MTV has done to this in a while is that Real Life, which was very entertaining.
Documentaries.
Yeah, what was it? Was it Real Life? No, it was not made. It was.
No, I think you're right. It's like Real Life, you know, or something like I'm a this or
right. Real Life, I'm a transgender.
Right. Yeah. Right? And it was like
because this is Real World. Yeah. So it is. It's Real Life. Mm-hmm. I'm a, and some of those are very, very well done documentaries on you know, various things.
So like, what was your guys' takeaway from this book?
Well, why don't we start it with Joe, since, you know, this was the first time you guys had read it.
Yeah.
I would probably have a different.
I've been bogarting the episode. Sorry.
Sorry. You got a lot to say. This one actually hit really home for me. I lost an uncle to AIDS when I was 2, so I never really knew him.
I'm sorry to hear that. I had no idea.
Yeah, me either.
Well, that's kind of what got me bawling at the end of this one. When he talks to the little girl who
that's such a heartbreaker.
That was,
That
was tough.
Yeah, but I was too young to remember him, but my mom always has such good things to say about him, and you know, I feel like I really missed out knowing him.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a lot of drama in my family, a lot of animosity between my my grandparents and him, because they were so against his lifestyle. He was gay and HIV positive, eventually AIDS. So I think getting to see this, because my mom had such a big heart for my Uncle Pat. Really touching to see, you know, other people love somebody so much the same way that it was in my family. So, warmed my heart, made me cry, all sorts of great stuff.
It's funny because you could replace the word AIDS with cancer, heart disease, any number of things, but AIDS has such a negative connotation because of
who gets it.
Right. Or, well, who used to get it most of all.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, who gets cancer most of all? People who smoke. And that's kind of a, right? Not so much anymore, but you know what I mean?
I think cancer is a lot more non-discriminatory than that.
Yeah, both of my parents have had cancer, and neither of them were serious smokers. My mom is, like, violently against smoking. She is the first person to go, oh, it smells so terrible, like right behind somebody if they're smoking. She hates it.
I hate it too.
And she got the kind of cancer that a person who smokes seriously would get. And it's the strangest thing. So She survived. My father, unfortunately, did not. And that's a lot. This book brought up a lot of that with my dad.
I was going to say, how was it reading
for you right really after hard. The anniversary? Like the everybody hanging around the hospital bed and talking about him losing his ability to communicate and the progression of having a hard time keeping consistent with the conversation, forgetting where he was, what he was doing, what day it was, that kind of stuff. Like, I went through that exact same thing with my father when his cancer finally went to his brain. And slowly, he really odd stuff at first. Like, you know, you start a conversation, you'd be into it a little ways, and then you could tell he wasn't with you anymore, mm-hmm. you know? But at first, he would try and cover it, and, you know. But eventually, it got to where you know, he had like kind of moments of clarity, but it was mostly just foggy. And then eventually it got to where he couldn't talk at all and would just stare. And, you know, I dropped out of college to spend the last few months of his life with him instead of us having to hire a nurse type person. And so, like, I was there at my parents' house with him in his hospital bed in the living room, you know, sitting on the couch next to him while he's in the hospital bed and taking care of him with mom and being there with him through the visits with the hospice nurse and all that sort of stuff. And this brought up a lot of that stuff. It was very, very well communicated. Judd did such an excellent job communicating that.
The love he had.
Well, yeah, but there's the atmosphere.
Yeah.
The atmosphere of being with someone that you love dearly.
At the end,
seeing them slowly slip away, the pieces of who they were and, you know, just losing. It's just like there's an indignity to not being able to communicate. You know, it's one thing if you're sick and you're hurting, but your mind is still there. But when there's something happening in your brain where you can't communicate and then you start to lose lucidity, it's just cruel and it's just wrong and really frustrating for everybody because, you know, they know what's happening. And it's frustrating for them at first, and then eventually they get so far gone that they can't communicate, or they come back for like 20 minutes once a day. When you have a real conversation, it's kind of like, it's like, oh, okay, all right, let me tell you what's going on, and let's talk, you know, and then they drift away.
I did the same thing with my grandmother's, yeah. And to me, those last 20-minute conversations that you got at the very end, I still remember those vividly.
Yeah, yeah, they're very special. They're very special. So, I mean, just, it was very, very powerful. And like you said, you could insert cancer, insert this, insert that in that sort of a situation. And for me, it really rung home with, you know, what finally took Pedro being something to do with his brain, because that's exactly the kind of stuff that we went through.
Mm.
Yeah. And it was just really powerful. So, yeah, it was a very, very good book and totally had me like choked up big time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because it's like, it's hard because it's reminding me of my own father, which was just 3 years ago. And then also spending this entire book coming to really care for Pedro as we understand him and as Judd represents him. And it's like losing him too. It's hard. It's a very powerful book.
Yeah, he was a great guy. I haven't had anybody really, really close to me pass away. My stepdad passed away a couple of years ago, but I wasn't there when it happened. It was quite sudden.
Mm.
But honestly, like, I have a feeling that, you know, like, I forget, we're 40, man. We're getting to the age where, like, your family starts passing away, and I'm starting to see, you know, my grandfather's really sick. My kids are in Oregon right now because their grandmother had some, you know, minor heart surgery thing because she's got all this stuff going on. And it's like, God, last time I saw you, you know, you were fine. You were spry. You know what I mean? It's like, God, we just, time catches up with you, you know? So it's a bummer that you have to see that happen. But, you know, I think
it's brutal. There was a great page where Judd was talking to Pam and on the phone, he was away and she was, you know, had been calling him hysterically because they had a close call with Pedro. And she said, you know, we're not going to have another close call. You need to come back if you can. Do you want to come back? I would understand if you didn't want to be here for this, you know, and he said, no, I want to be there. And it's like, I had that very same those very same conversations, you know, with people. It's like, that's a choice. It's like, this is coming. This is happening right now. And like, it's weird to where you start to stop. You stop doing things. You stop going out. You stop, you know, somebody else needs to go grocery shopping because they might go right now. And I'm going to be with them until it happens. And everybody's just, you know, sitting around hurrying up and waiting. And, you know, the day that Dad passed on, it was it was just like that. Everybody was standing around, hanging out at the house, and just listening to his labored breathing until mm-hmm. it was stopped. And that's exactly what it's like. It's a very good depiction of that experience.
Yeah.
That's brutal.
John and I have...
it sucks so much.
Both of us have gone through that a lot, and while it wasn't my parents, my grandmother was, as close to me as my mom was, and then we had to go through it with Mary's and my stepfather, a couple years ago too. So, it's a tough thing. It's loss and all that, but I didn't mean to bring everybody down when I recommended this.
It's a powerful story. That's okay. It's good. Yeah.
So,
it's meant to make you feel something, and damn, it worked.
Yeah, it, like I said, we will always have this book in stock at the shop. If it's something you guys want to check out, it's $18 and
worth every penny.
Yeah. And, it's good to revisit something like this so it doesn't become forgotten.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad I read this, and I was apprehensive at first because I was sort of like, what am I going to get out of it? I burned through the book.
Yeah.
And I cried twice.
Yeah.
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 And I was like, after I cried, I was like, wow. Like, I didn't realize how much of an impact. You know what I mean?
We're all big burly dudes.
Yeah, I'm a big burly dude.
Yeah. Well, except for you are a big burly dude.
And it literally brought us all to tears, so it's that powerful.
I think the other side of that, as heavy as it is and heartbreaking, it's also, I think it's very uplifting. And the spirituality side of it, it's talking about Pedro as a young kid, and he was sort of born against all odds. And it's talking about he was sort of viewed as a very charmed child that even they tied the symbolic shackle around his
feet to keep him grounded.
So the angels wouldn't take him away. It's something... he was put on earth with this purpose, and this turned out to be such a, greater thing than he himself as one person could do, to carry on and have this message and this just real strength of spirit, and that it lives on also, through Judd and through the people that knew him and the message that he was able to get out, through his own story and even being on the real world. So it's uplifting, I think, also.
I really like how he fleshed out the love story between him and Pam.
Yeah.
I totally forgot about that when I, after I'd read it and rereading that.
I like how he pinpoints the moments where each of them were like, this is the person for me.
Yeah.
And how neat that is, and how he's, relayed how she felt.
And I love the scenes where she was studying and would fall asleep.
Put it away, right?
So he would go into a room and
tuck her in
and take the book and turn off the lights and all that. And
Pedro teased him.
Yeah.
He would highlight the wrong stuff in her book before he.
And nowadays, you don't even have books.
Everybody's on. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So, books available downstairs. Highly recommend it to those that are listening. It's pretty much all we have to say. We're all wiping tears out of our eyes and knocking down.
Yeah.
Choking them back.
I think next week we're going to visit the garbage fire that is DC Comics.
No.
They've relaunched their Captain Marvel character underneath the name everyone knows him as Shazam. So I want to see how... I have a connection to the original Shazam, but I don't think you guys
like the original 50s
and throughout, the Billy Batson, and what you guys think about the relaunch, completely different, not having a big tie to him like I do.
Wasn't there a Shazam TV show when we were kids?
Yeah,
I remember that.
He rode around in an RV with an old wizard.
I don't remember that. I think I remember the costume
and Shazam. Looking back on it, it was kind of pedo-y.
Oh, really?
This is when you need me, just call my name.
Yeah. I think that'll be fun
to see.
That
sounds cool.
Because a lot of people I know who are big DC fans have dropped the line because of the changes they've done.
Yeah, you hear that a lot.
And so I think it'll be interesting to review the book with no expectations or pre-existing, you know, what it is, and just how do you like it as, treat it like it is a new character.
Hmm. So. Are the writers and artists, are they people that we'd recognize, or is it still...
Yeah, the writers are, the writer is Jeff Johns, who, you know...
We just read.
Yeah. Jeff Johns from, you know, who's DC's basically head writer.
Mm.
And the artist is Gary Frank, who you guys remember from Midnight Nation.
Oh, cool. Oh. Excellent.
So...
Oh, yeah. Looking forward to that. That sounds good.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening to us for this hour, and... we will see you guys next week, or you can listen to us next week. And thanks for listening. It was a good show this week.
I agree.
Yeah, thanks for sharing this week.
Thank you guys for reading it.
See you later.